Hello and welcome back to the Cory Doctorow podcast. We're a week out from the publication of The Lost Cause, my upcoming climate hope punk novel that has had such good early notices from the likes of Naomi Klein and Rebecca Solnit, Kim Stanley Robinson and Bill McKibben. I hope you'll consider picking it up. I'm going to be going out on tour with it, so naturally there's a lot of travel coming up, both before the book comes out and then once it's out. This November 8th, I'll be online with the Second Life Book Club with my co-author Rebecca Giblin talking about our book, Chokepoint Capitalism. And then the next day, November the 9th, I'll be on Hallway Track, the online events organized by Dan Hahn. Brian Merchant and I will be coming together to present both of our new books. I'll be presenting my book, The Internet Con, and Brian will be presenting his excellent book about the Luddites, Blood in the Machine. And then the tour kicks off. On November the 13th, the night before publication day, I will be at the Studio City Library main branch, 6:30 p.m., with a very special guest to kick off the book. Then I'm off to Stratford, Ontario, to do the CBC Ideas Festival on November the 16th. And on the afternoon of the 16th, I'm doing an event at the Stratford Public Library for middle schoolers and high schoolers. On November the 18th, I'm coming to Concord, New Hampshire for Gibson's Bookstore. And on November the 20th, it's Simsbury, Connecticut at the Simsbury Public Library. In Toronto, I'll be at the Metro Ref main branch on November the 22nd, interviewed by Vass Bednar about this book, The Lost Cause. And then I'll be presenting Frances Hogan on November the 27th. She's the Facebook whistleblower. We will be at the Toronto Metro Reference Library main branch as well. On November the 29th, I'll be in New York City at the Strand Bookstore. And on December the 7th, I'll be in Chapel Hill at Flyleaf Books. Lots and lots more travel coming up, not all of it in the calendar yet. You can always find out where I'll be by going to pluralistic.net and picking the latest issue of the newsletter and checking out the upcoming events section. Well, this week, I'm going to be reading to you part two of my short story, The Canadian Miracle, recently published on Tor.com and set in the universe of The Lost Cause. And next week, I'm really happy to say I'll be back with more short fiction. I'll be reading my short story, Moral Hazard, just published on Halloween in a new anthology called Communications Breakdown. This is the annual science fiction anthology from MIT Press, this year edited by Jonathan Strawn. And I'm going to be reading that to you next Sunday, just before I go out on tour. But this week, I'm going to be reading, as I say, this short story set in the Lost Cause universe, and I'm going to get right to it because, as I mentioned last week when I read you part one, we've got a great house guest this week. We've got my mother-in-law in town from Wales, and this is her last day in town. So I'm going to read this final part of the short story to you and then go spend a little time with her before we take her to the airport. So here we are from Tor.com, The Canadian Miracle, Part 2. A short story set in the world of The Lost Cause. I woke up sticky and hot as usual, hungover too, which was less usual. Ice cream hangovers are the worst, with that pasty, full mouth pucker from too much sugar. My cot was already soaked with sweat. I realized I'd slept in, way in. It was high noon. No wonder the old high school whose upper floor we were using as dorms was so hot and muggy. I needed a shower, so I grabbed my towel, still damp and stinking of mildew despite the silver ions they doped all our gear with, and headed to the old girl's locker room. I was toweling off when I remembered what Becca had told me the night before, my incredible, all-consuming rage. She had been angry too, and that must have been why she said what she did, just trying to hurt my feelings. Becca had been through a lot of shit. I mean, we all had, but she'd had some really tough times growing up, and if there was one thing I'd learned, it was that trauma could manifest itself in all kinds of unpredictable ways. I'd halfway convinced myself that Becca had just been raging when I got back to the room to discover her waiting for me. Alicia, Becca, it's okay. I'm sorry, too. I shouldn't have freaked out like that. I disagree with your choice, but it's yours to... She cut me off. Alicia, shit. She looked terrible, worse even than I felt. Not just hungover, either. I'm sorry, she said. Her voice broke. She handed me her screen. It took a while for me to figure out what I was looking at. The footage was grainy, taken from a long way off with night scopes, but then the camera zoomed out and I realized it was a video of me, drinking Mississippi mudslides with Elnora, dancing with friends, chatting. I cranked up the volume and heard the narrator, a young man, southern accent, local. Canadian so-called relief workers have been working actively with domestic agitator elements to interfere in our election, seen here literally dancing on the graves of our state senators, who the foreigners are hoping to replace with disaster socialists who want to exploit our terrible tragedy to impose their agenda on us. The overwhelming dread from the night before was back, but what I saw next actually made me drop the screen. My own photo, ganked from a social media profile, with my name and docs, date of birth, email, social handles, on a chyron beneath it. The voice was still talking, but all I could hear was the roaring in my ears, and that's when I dropped the screen. When I picked it up again, I was looking at more nightscope videos of doorbell ringers, blurry cam zooms on the faces of the volunteers, cutting to more social media doxings, my fellow blue helmets. Becca took the screen out of my nerveless fingers. I realized I was still wearing a towel. Woodenly, I began to dress. I even started putting on makeup, my hands shaking. Alicia, I'm sorry. My makeup wouldn't go on right, not with all the tears, and I blotted my face on a t-shirt from the pile on the top of my backpack. I'm sorry too, Becca. I'm sorry that I think that this means we just totally, utterly fucked these people over. You know this means they're going to lose the election, right? You don't know that. No one knows that. But from the look on her face, I knew she agreed. I didn't even check my screen for jobs. None of us would be working that day. They burned a cross on the lawn of the old high school that night. They didn't even wear hoods. They wore the red hats, and they had signs. Foreigners out! Stop rigging our elections! There were pictures of me dancing, shopped with gravestones. I was back in Toronto when they announced the Mississippi election results. Becca and I hadn't spoken once as we packed up our gear and got our transport assignments. The couple of times when our paths crossed during the bug out, we'd avoided eye contact. But I'd seen Elnora one more time before I left. She was part of the group, the surprisingly large group, that turned up to thank us and send us on our way. She gave me a really excellent hug and told me to take care of myself, and I told her to take care of herself and wished her luck, and she wished me luck. I threw myself into blue helmet work when I got back, going into the office to do admin stuff, taking the subway out to Etobicoke to work with the quartermasters, on getting gear rehabilitated, inventoried, and back into the field. There were blue helmets departing every week, going all over the world, anywhere on fire, anywhere underwater, anywhere people were sick or roasting. Aleppo, Hong Kong, Lesbos, St. Petersburg, Cape Town. But not to America. Not even when Lower Manhattan got hit with a storm surge that overwhelmed the seawall and inundated the MTA tunnels. The blue helmets I worked alongside in Toronto didn't want to talk to me any more than Becca did. Our group were pariahs, even if we'd been exonerated by our inspector general. The Canadian miracle meant that we were the first generation in a century not to fear the future, a nation that was relocating its coastal cities and building high-speed rail at a rate never before seen on the American landmass. We'd been so enthusiastic about exporting our courage and our hope. Now, the Americans saw us as ideological fifth columnists, people whose help came with political strings attached. There was word that we would no longer be welcome in Brazil, and whatever progress had been made on a blue helmet mission to mainland China had been squandered. Not back to square one, back to square minus 1 million. They blamed me I blamed me. For me, the Canadian miracle had begun in Dundas Square on election night when a combination of disasters befalling other parties and good fortune for the one party that was willing to face facts had catapulted the longest of long shots, Brenda Chimanins, into the Prime Minister's seat. Every time I'd walked past the Eaton Centre since, I'd gotten shivers as I remembered the wild elation of that night, the sense that the unbelievable could at last be believed. So I went back to Dundas Square for the Mississippi election results, and of course, it was full of Americans, some of the 7 million who'd made it over the border with whatever they could carry as their cities drowned, Miami, burned, LA, or succumbed to mosquito-borne dengue epidemic, Phoenix. They had the refugee look of people who weren't allowed to work and didn't know if they would ever be allowed to work, and they watched the show with murmurs and passed around one-hitters and flasks. You could mistake them for solemn if you didn't notice just how jittery they were. I kept feeling like one of them was going to recognize me and denounce me for destroying the chances that they'd had in Mississippi, call me out as the blue helmet who danced on the graves of the state's lost senators. But no one recognized me, and as the results rolled in, the jitteriness of the crowd turned to excitement and then elation, a version of what I'd experienced 3 years before on election night, and we watched as one at a time the other candidates conceded. And then we watched the victory speeches from Dealer HQ, and I even spotted Elnora dancing in the background of one of them, and then I was dancing too. They enacted the state-level Green New Deal on Inauguration Day, using the same legislative template they'd used in Texas and that they were about to vote on in California, Hawaii, and Minnesota. And just as in those states, the MAGA clubs brigaded the local jobs guarantee meetings to secure state funding that put their cross-burning asses on the payroll. It was clear that they thought this was hilarious. No one else did. But if cushy government jobs for climate deniers was the price of saving the planet, it was a small price to pay. Well, that's it for this week. Thank you for tuning in again. I'll be back next week, as I say, with new short fiction for you, 2 short stories in a row. I'll be reading from the new MIT Press anthology, Communications Breakdown, My Story, Moral Hazard. And this story you've been listening to was The Canadian Miracle from my upcoming novel, The Lost Cause. I hope you'll give it a shot when it comes out on November the 14th. And I'll talk to you next week with Moral Hazard. Until then.
You've been listening to the Cory Doctorow Podcast, licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Sharealike, US 3.0. Or as Woody Guthrie put it in another context, this song is copyrighted in the US under Seal of Copyright 154085 for a period of 28 years, and anyone caught singing it without our permission will be a mighty good friend of ourn, because we don't give a dern. Publish it, write it, sing it, swing to it, yodel it, we wrote it, that's all we wanted to do. Many thanks to John Taylor Williams for mastering. That's Ryneck Studio, Ryneck Studio at gmail.com. John Taylor Williams is a full-time self-employed audio engineer, producer, composer, and sound designer. In his free time, he makes beer, jewelry, odd musical instruments, and furniture. He likes to meditate, to read, and to cook. Talk to you next week.